L. Grimace Mugs. Hello Kitty Keychains. Teeny Beanies. For a limited time, your favorite McDonald's collectibles, filled with memories and magic, are now on collectible cups. Get one of six when you order a collector's meal at McDonald's with your choice of 10-piece McNuggets or a Big Mac. Come get your cup while you still can. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
At participating McDonald's for a limited time while supplies last.
You're listening to Castrol CarCast on Podcast One.
Well, we talk some movies. We talk car movies. We also talk to Simon Pagenaud, guy who won the last Indy 500. Such a sweetheart of a guy, right?
Yeah, he absolutely is. And he dropped some news about the rescheduling of the Indy 500.
With some interesting angles on it that you probably wouldn't have thought of if you weren't as steeped in it as we are and as he is. First, I'll tell you about Geico. Oh, yeah. Do you have homeowners insurance? You have renters insurance? You probably have one or the other. Now it's time to do a little bundling. Take the homeowners and the renters and bundle it with the auto insurance. Go to Geico, geico.com. Spend a couple minutes. See just how much you could be saving. When you bundle, it is easy, it is quick, and it's also a time saver in terms of having everything under one umbrella. So go to Geico, get your bundle on at geico.com. Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on mandate. Get it on. And welcome to CarCast. I'm Adam Carolla. That's Matt, the moderator. DeAndrea over
Hello.
There. I'm coming to you from my home theater in my bathrobe.
I can see you in your bathrobe.
Yeah, I was in my bathrobe. It's a luxurious bathrobe that Jimmy Kimmel got me some years ago for like Christmas. It's lovely. And I thought, well, as long as I'm working from my house, what am I changing into my street clothes for? So I just came down in my bathrobe, and we'll do it super casually. Matt's over in his den. Simon Pagenaud, the last guy to win the Indy 500, is Indy driver, is going to be with us in a couple of few. News, well, things to complain about.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking at a episode of Adam Carolla Goes Racing, and we're sending it over to somebody to see if they had some interest in making it into a TV show or whatever, and right smack dab in the middle of my race with the Newman's GT1 car, there we had a warm-up lap. Now people say to me, hey Adam, how do you know it's a warm-up lap? How do I know it's a warm-up lap? I didn't edit it together. I mean, you got to think of it. Let's look at it through my perspective. All I think is I'm watching footage from a race that's edited together, right? But how do I know it's a warm-up lap? Well, I know it's a warm-up lap because the cars are zigzagging trying to get heat into the tire, and it never goes above 4,000 RPM.
Yeah.
Which is, I would argue,
nobody's passing. Nobody's racing.
Nobody's racing. Now, I would argue that that's not only a visual, but it's an audible. And like you have two ways. Like when you edit, you have your ears and you have your eyes. This does both of them. This is people going down a straightaway and zigzagging slowly. I can't figure out why it makes it into the film every time. It's half speed down a straightaway while everyone is zigzagging. First things first, did anyone ever zigzag down that straightaway during the rest of this race? If the answer is no, what makes this lap different from the others?
It would be an interesting part of racing if that's what everybody had to do, was, oh, on this part of the track, you have to zigzag.
Right.
Yeah.
So I had this super satisfying conversation with Nate where I said, Nate, for the 28th time, when we do these race videos, we can't have warm-up laps We can't have footage of warm-up laps in the body of the race that we cut together. And then he goes, I was zigzagging down the straightaway. And he goes, yeah, on that one, you were talking about putting heat into your tires. And I said, no, I wasn't. It'd be great if I was. I mean, it'd be great for you. It'd be great for you if I was talking about that. Chris, you probably heard this conversation a few times, which is, I know you wish I was talking about putting heat into my tires because then it would fit what I was doing. But I'll go back and look at the tape anyway. And I went back and looked at the tape, and all I said was, now it's time to rejoin the race. Or, you know, it's warm-up lap. I don't know what's wrong with me that I'm obsessed with this, or is there anything wrong with me?
I think the issue is the guys editing it and are in charge of creating this are not obsessed with it, right? Like, why?
Why can't they be obsessed with me being obsessed with it?
Well, it wouldn't even be on your radar if it doesn't keep happening again and again and again. It would just be like, that looks good, makes sense, let's send it out. But now we're here.
There's something about cutting together race footage that just escapes people. Like, even when they go, now it's time to rejoin the race, I started passing cars. It's just me in another car alone on a long straightaway where there's no other cars on it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, why do they do that? There's so much footage of so many cars. There's so much going on. Why? What is that? Why do they detune everything? I don't get it.
That's a good question. I would say, is there a way for us to not film the warm-up laps? But there's not. When the car is moving, there's nothing we can do. We can't take that out of the equation, right? Because I don't know how else to fix it. I guess we could just take the raw footage and go, before you do anything, erase the warm-up laps. Just get it out of the footage. If you don't have it, then you can't put it in there. It seems silly that that's what you'd have to do.
Warm-up lap is the first lap, so you can just go past the nobody shoehorns or sneaks in the warm-up lap in between the sixth and ninth lap. It's always at the beginning of the race.
Yeah.
But don't use the lap from the beginning of the race. Or maybe I'll just hold my hand over the camera or something like that while we're doing the warm-up lap. Isn't that be a good idea?
That'd be funny.
It's a bizarre world to live in where you're really one of your small asks is don't put this super slow, weird warm-up lap shit in the body of this race that you're constructing. But good news, you have 9 other laps to choose from.
Yeah.
And then it gets in every time. Now, you know what happens every time? The editors like it when you're warming up the tires because there's movement.
Right. Which is a whole nother conversation. It took them 2 years to figure out that's what we need to show movement. It's not just a picture of you staring out the window straight, not shifting, not throttling, not doing anything. We're like, you got to show movement. When you cut in the car, we need some movement. And now they're like, well, we found the most movement. And that's the warm-up laugh.
Everybody is zigging and zagging every direction. Yeah. I don't mind. It looks like something, but anybody who knew anything about racing would think these guys are idiots.
Yeah.
Wouldn't they?
It's funny, and I know I brought this up before, but almost every night, late night, on like Stars or something, they show reruns of Miami Vice, the TV show, and they always do that montage. They're playing some Jan Hammer song and Crockett's in his Testarossa in the middle of the night going by the Fountain Blue Hotel in Miami 4 times, by the way. I don't know why he keeps circling the hotel. And every time they cut to him in the car, he's shifting. You would think there's 37 gears in a Testarossa, but the editor's like, got to show some movement. You got a drama in his face. Click, 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 click. He's constantly shifting, and it's fantastic.
Speaking of that, I was watching Ford v. Ferrari over the sequestration, and there's a couple of things in there that in the racing world that they don't quite get right, which is, first things first, that part where two guys are going down the Mulsanne straight, and Christian Bale looks at the evil guy from Ferrari And then he looks at him and he looks at him. And then you see Bale's foot push down and go past him. Like, for the love of Christ, people who make racing movies, when guys are on straightaways, they're just planted the whole time. There's no look at him, look at me. All right, now I'm going. Like, you just go flat. You go flat, you grab the next gear, you go flat again. There is no, okay, now I'm pulling away from you, move. They always do that. And then the big, and I'll let you try to solve this riddle. The big deal was the pivotal part of that movie is Lorenzo Bandini was looking at him and looking at him. And right about the time that Ken Miles just went, well, now I'm going to floor it. He floored it and started to take off. And Lorenzo Bandini was next to him. And he's in his Ferrari, and they're showing the tachometer. It's like 9,200, like, and he's like, boom, it blows up, and he's out. Now, that car is either not geared right, or Bandini didn't grab the next gear, because it's not going down the Mulsanne straight at 9,200 RPM. It's 1966. That car's red line was 7,000 or 7,200 or whatever it is. That car, they don't have that car geared. He's either in a lesser gear. He either would have shifted or they wouldn't have geared it that way. What are they?
Are they trying to show that he's going beyond the limits of the engine just to stay ahead? Like, he knows it's a 7,200 RPM engine. I mean, nine's a little high, but, are they trying to say he has to go beyond the red line? This is cold trickle blowing the engine, like that kind of thing. Like, there's the only way, you know, because if he was pushing it, but he was still like in the safe zone of, you know, 7,000 to 7,200, maybe it doesn't seem as extreme. Although, you know, well,
but
the 2000 RPM extra seems a little,
but what's happening is there's no more gears to grab.
There's no more gears to grab or.
Well, but would that car go to 9,000 RPM at the end, like in fifth gear? Like, here's the point. At a certain point, as long as the Mulsanne straight is, you'd run out of straightaway.
Yeah.
I don't think those cars were geared to feather it in fifth gear or feather it in fourth gear, like all the way down at Mulsanne. I think they just planted it. And at some point, the wind stop them at 218 or whatever they were doing. I don't know. Maybe Simon Pagenaud, has he driven it?
Has Pagenaud done Le Mans? I'm curious. I don't remember, but he does quite a bit of sports car racing too, I believe, like with Acura. So we should find out from him. If
I'm seeing 2009, he drove in the 24-hour of Le Mans in LMP1 for Pescarolo Sport Team.
Oh, okay.
All right. Well, there you go.
It's at the bottom. It says, well, no, you say 2001 or you mean 2011?
2009.
Oh, sorry, 2009. I got 2011 one. So, sorry, second at the 24 hours of Le Mans.
Double check that. The notes say, yeah, second place in 2011 at Le Mans.
Oh, sorry. He's done 2008 to 2011. I just was reading one of the years. But yeah, best finish, second place in 2011.
And what was he driving? Do we know? I'm just curious if it was one of the prototype cars or if he was a sports car.
What I love about Kalen, thanks for listening, Kalen puts these things together. What did Le Mans? All right, there's 15 bullet points. Le Mans at the very bottom of the page. Above it a few spots is won the Champ Car Atlantic in 2009 with the team Australian as rookie season, which is all great information, but I think we'd rather talk. Le Mans should probably make it higher up on the list. You know what I'm saying?
That makes sense, yes. Sorry.
Yeah.
Well, considering I think we talk about Le Mans every single show, wouldn't Le Mans make it up higher up in the facts department? You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I hear you.
Yeah, okay, that's good. All right. So we'll talk to whenever Simon Pagenaud is on Max Battle. We'll talk to Simon Pagenaud. Anyway, I don't like, I'm tired of the move in racing movies where they look at each other and then floor it and pull away, because I wish that was a possibility. But every time I've raced somebody and you're next to them on the straightaway, everyone has got it floored. There is no flooring it. That's just, it's, that's how it is. And then there's a version of that in the turns or coming out of the turns. One could possibly work into a movie, but not in the straightaway, especially not when you're well down the straightaway, right?
No, right. But so instead of the Ferrari tacking out at 9,200 RPM, maybe just the bolts in his floorboard should come loose and that should pop out.
I do love that. I do love that.
I always miss that. I love that part of Fast and Furious 1.
Yeah. Well, the thing I like about that is the conceit that that car even has that in it. That's the conceit.
Yeah.
Like there is the thing about in a unibodied car, like an RX-7, where you put your feet in terms of the passenger side.
Yeah.
That is a sheet of metal that weighs about as much as a roll of Saran wrap.
Like, yeah.
Right. So there is no weight savings. There is no weight savings to trying to cut out that floorboard.
And then add a bunch of bolts.
And add right? a bunch of bolts. So, but there is another possibility. And that possibility is an access panel.
Okay.
Except
yeah.
for
what are you
there is nothing but the ground underneath where your feet are. I get it. Like some, like if they... If that thing is on the firewall and it's like, hey, to get to this starter, you have to pull the engine, but we put this access panel here and now we can get to the starter through the firewall.
Yeah.
That'll buy.
Or the other way around, you got to go through the floor to get to something inside the car. You would think to his super secret nitrous bottles underneath the seat cushion, but doesn't the access panel floors give away the idea of the super secret nitrous? Like, hey, I don't see any nitrous bottles, but I do see a really odd bolted access panel. What's that for? Nothing.
Simon is running a little late. Yeah, Chris, we could have him on at the okay. time he's requesting. Uppity Shelby American and the 24-Hour War all made the top 10 racing documentaries on Top Gear. Yeah. My phone hasn't stopped ringing. I got my dad on the blower. I got my mom on the phone. Lynette and the kids are going nuts.
None of that sounds true.
They have no idea. They don't even know. It's such a, you know, it's weird. It's weird that we're in this digital land. You know, we're in this digital electronic world where all things are possible. I sort of rank it up there with, my dad has a computer. My mom has a computer. They'll never know that their son's movies made three of the top 10 on the whatever, whatever. I don't blame them. It's just weird that it's not like, oh, they can't walk down to the post office and get the, read the flyer that's thumbtacked to the wall. It's just, it could come to their computer. You know,
well, your dad's a little old school. He could be sitting in the crapper reading the actual hard copy of Top Gear magazine.
Well, I don't know. He may have let his subscription run out. I think he said after Original Crew went and did Grand Tour, he said he was out.
He's out.
Yeah.
All right. Well, then I don't blame him then.
A lot of people speculate that my dad was the original Stig. I don't know if I've ever brought that up to you.
I think you and I have different thoughts of what a lot of people means.
Well, there's talk on the street in the Altadena, Pasadena area.
Yeah.
That's urban lore is what I'm saying. So that was nice. We made three out of the top 10 of a pretty reputable magazine that has a lot of movies to choose from. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good.
So we'll take that. People can enjoy those on Netflix.
Now, there's a little bit of I don't know how much you can talk about it or willing to or want to, but there's some buzz around Hollywood now about Uppity as a feature film. Now, we've always liked the idea. We've always said it was a great story, and the documentary told it well. I think people seem to be enjoying it that are watching it. It caters to being a good feature film, but Hollywood's a pain in the ass. And you never know what they want, what they don't want.
Yeah,
nobody really knows what works and doesn't work. Everybody thinks they do. They don't really know. So,
well, but there's
some buzz.
There's a thing in Hollywood where, like, you're not supposed to talk about anything, which I don't know how that works, but I've never participated in the doesn't want to talk about anything movement. And it used to be really strong. There was a lot of stuff in Hollywood. There's like, don't talk about anything. I always talked about everything. And everyone always yelled at me like, no, you can't talk about this thing. But nothing ever happened. Like nothing ever came out the back end.
If you feel better, don't name names.
No. I name everyone all the time because nothing ever happens and I don't care. But maybe that's the reason I'm in my bathrobe at home right now. So I always talked about everything. And there also used to be stupid rules. Like you can do Letterman, but then you have to wait 6 months before you do Leno. You can't do or you could do Leno, but then you'd have to wait. That Letterman doesn't want. It's like, who cares? It just, you have a book or a movie. Go do Leno, go do Letterman. Like I could never figure out what all the rules were. And now there's not any rules. So the guy who said, I don't know why there's rules, turned out to be right. Cause now there isn't any rules and nobody
cares. Yeah. Yeah.
So we had, first we had Brian Koppelman interested in it from Billions and making a series on Showtime that sort of didn't go anywhere, or they kind of went somewhere, but then it stopped. And the whole John Singleton thing happened. That tragedy happened. We had Ice Cube interested in doing it with his company. And that got put on hold a little bit because we're trying to do something with Showtime.
Cube was thinking film. Showtime was thinking scripted series, right?
Just right.
Offer some clarification. And
right. We had.
And then the negotiations with Showtime kind of put a hold on Ice Cube. And then.
Right.
You know, now he's off to other things.
HBO are dickheads and they never had any. They're just insulting. They didn't have any interest in it at all when I showed it to them. And then. God, what entertainment am I trying to think of? Sorry.
The company?
Yeah.
Atlas?
Hmm. You always forget Atlas. I mean, I forget the name. I get stuck on the name Atlas for some reason. It's just one of those things that doesn't work in my head for some reason. But Atlas came around and they do Wonder Woman and all those big movies. So then Atlas was talking about putting us together with some directors and blah, blah, blah. Wonder Woman, Batman v Superman, Suicide Squad, Justice League, Scooby-Doo, American Hustle. They got a lot of range.
Scooby-Doo I've seen.
American Hustle may have been better. Three Kings, 12 Monkeys.
I don't know.
Yeah.
12 Monkeys.
City of Angels. So
box office.
Yeah. City of Angels, by the way, was made in 2998. So our great-grandchildren, that could have been a typo, our great-great-great-great-grandchildren can enjoy a movie called City of Angels to come out in 1,000 years. So
I was putting it up as fast as I could.
Yeah. Well, listen.
That was all right.
Just because you're going fast doesn't mean you have to fuck nobody up. Look at it that way.
Nobody else can see it but you.
Yeah.
Simon Pagenaud goes fast. He doesn't drive into the infield and run over concessionaires. I'm trying to go fast. I was going as fast as I could. You drove through the men's room. I was going fast.
Yeah, what am I going to do?
I can't wait for $29.98, a movie called City of Angels comes out, and you'll be biting your tongue. Your
My great, great, great grandkids. So, and then more recently, Mahershala Ali's people have come sniffing around to see what we might do or what they might do with that story. So I don't know. The shutdown has kind of stymied a lot of these discussions, but there is interest in uppity as a feature. So we shall see. I'm not holding my breath, but I am happy that people are responding this way.
And it's nice to see Willie get some attention out of the whole thing as well. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's probably, 30 years too late, but I think he's enjoying it. And I've seen him do a handful of interviews and selling some uppity hats and having a good time with it. So it's good.
Yes. Like him. Yeah. Good things for Willie T.
Yeah.
Let's see. So we'll keep you guys posted on that. So it's such a weird thing because, you make a movie like this, you get turned down by Tribeca and South by Southwest and Sundance, all the majors, every major film festival turns it down. So then there's a part of you that's like, well, what do we got here? And then all these people want to make it into a feature and it's 97% with the people on Rotten Tomatoes and everyone loves it. So then what's going on? Is it a bad film? Is it a good film? Well, according to all the major film festivals, it's not good enough to make it into their film festival. And then according to Hollywood and Rotten Tomatoes and everyone who's seen it, it's a great film. So mm-hmm. I don't know where the answer is. I'm going to go with the people.
Yeah.
On this one. People go, you never know. It's like, it's up to taste or who knows who sees what or whatever it is with any of these docs we're talking about or with the Hammer or Road Hard or whatever it is. They never make them into any festivals, but I would say you could deduce it. Like what you could do is you could pick a film festival like Sundance Film Festival and you could pick their last five docs from the last 5 years or their top five docs or their middle five docs from the last 5 years and just get a general score from Rotten Tomatoes. Like you get an average and it would, with the people because the critics aren't reviewing uppity, but you're with the people and you'd go, okay, the average score from the last 5 years for the mid five movies from Sundance is an 81. And then you go, okay, what's yours? Ours is a 97. Okay. What was the Newman doc? That was a 91. Okay. What was, and then you'd find that all the scores were above their median score.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go, well, that's something, isn't it? I mean, why not go? Why isn't that a piece of evidence? Yes, Max Pata.
Well, I'm also thinking because if you look at it from any branding or marketing perspective, the one thing that you really can't buy that everybody wants is engagement. It's not likes. It's not anything like that. Because you can buy all that, but having people talking about it is really what you want. And I'm seeing on Twitter, people are still just messaging you and tweeting you and saying how much they love the movie. I've never seen a reaction like this to really anything you've done to where it's been so rich in engagement.
Oh, well, that's a good point that only bolstered my own, Max Zapata. Sorry about that 29.98 remark.
Exactly. Yeah.
Sorry.
All is forgiven. Take it back.
Yeah, so then it leaves you with the story of, well, why isn't it accepted to any film festivals? And people think it's paranoid or grandiose, but I think it's because my name's on it. That's why. I don't know. I can't offer an empirical piece of evidence as to why none of them ever make it into these film festivals because they seem to be universally enjoyed. That much I can tell you. And this one had a strong civil rights kind of leaning to it. So you'd think it'd be right up their alley. But once again, we shall not be entering those film festivals. And by the way, not for now, but for now and forever. It's never going to happen. This is probably our sixth film that's been rejected from those.
Well, look, we talked about it before. I think the Newman film was a great doc. It was the first one. It was a fantastic story. And they had, at, you know, Paul Newman was the biggest star in the world in his day. And his, you know, his best buddy is Robert Redford, who I don't know if he runs the day to day at Sundance, but owns it or controls it. And Sundance turned down the movie featuring his, as a matter of fact, Robert Redford's in the doc. And they still said no, which seemed weird.
I don't know. In a weird way, I respect them for sticking by their guns. You know what I mean?
Like, how about a
Corolla?
How about a, hey, we feel like it's a conflict of interest because our boss is in your film, but we'd love to show it, not vote on it or anything. Just do like a, like an exhibition run during the, during the Sundance Film Festival, you know?
Yeah. Nah. Those guys, all those film festival guys are like, they're like, somebody took the worst guys in Hollywood, the guys you hate the most woke dickheads from Hollywood, and fucking fed them creatine. Except for it wasn't creatine, it was douche. And just turned them into a fucking weaponized version of like all the guys you see in Hollywood with all the bracelets and shit and who are total douchebags and pussies. The guys who run Sundance are like fucking supercharged versions of those pussies.
Years ago, they were in my building when I started one of my internet companies, my first company in Santa Monica, and the building there was like a 12-story building, and the submission department for Sundance Film Festival was like, I don't know, on the sixth floor. And once a year, there'd be just be like these giant boxes of videotapes coming and all through the lobby. It was just videotapes of people just submitting shit. And they just keep taking them upstairs. I don't know what their process was for trying to go through any of these things or decide or whatever. But it just seemed like a bunch of 20-somethings in an office going through videotapes. Like, I don't know what the qualifications were.
Well, I think they have their favorites or their darlings or the people they like, and then they have their like no fly zones. Like Max Zapata could probably figure out that like the Duplass brothers have probably had a whole bunch of films accepted to Sundance over the years. Max Zapata could probably figure it out, but it's also why when one of them met with Ben Shapiro to ask him some questions and then sent out a tweet saying Ben Shapiro's a decent guy, he had to walk it back.
Yeah.
Because if the Sundance people find out that you're friends with Ben Shapiro, then there will be no more, Duplass brothers in Sundance. So that's why I have to walk stuff back. Not because you don't have to walk it back because you think you should walk it back, or because you're sorry for what you said, or you even disagree with what you said, or you've thought about what you said. You have to walk it back because if you cross up Sundance, then there is no more. The Duplass brothers can join me on the no-fly zone. They don't walk that shit back, which is, I don't know, feels a little like McCarthyism.
Yeah.
And the thing that's funny is the assholes from Sundance would do nothing but rail against McCarthyism every waking moment of their day. Now they're out practicing it, which is you disagree with me, you don't get to get in our festival, even if the festival and the film have nothing to do with your politics or my politics.
Right.
An interesting way to run a company. I would argue it makes you a hypocrite, but I'll buy Max Zapata a few minutes on seeing if we can run down the number of Duplass projects that made it into Sundance. But it's a club. You got to be in it. If you're not in it, you're out of it. And if you're out of it, you're not getting in it. That's out. All right. Let me tell you about Tommy John. Tommy John. Oh, these guys are the best. For once, I'm going to be honest. I'm not wearing my Tommy Johns right now. I am au naturel in a bathrobe, but, as soon as I hit that rowing machine, I am donning my Tommy Johns. I set a personal best on that rowing machine last night. I did 6,544 meters on it in a half hour, in a 30-minute period, and I could see my Tommy Johns peeking out through my shorts. See, I don't like it when they get sucked up the thigh there. I like it when the under when the Tommy Johns are down low, and the shorts come up high. The loungewear is unbelievable. Well, you saw I was wearing the loungewear shirt for the first like 17 days of quarantine. Eventually, I just I had to put it in the hamper because people knew, because people could see that I was wearing it now past 2 weeks. So, but the loungewear is amazing. Go to TommyJohn.com. You can get 20% off the loungewear and everything site wise. And it's the best. It's the most comfortable. They got the best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free guarantee. You'll never go back to what you're wearing. It's Tommy John, right, Matt?
Yeah, hurry to TommyJohn.com/CarCast for 20% off your first order. That's TommyJohn.com/CarCast for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/CarCast.
So this virtual race thing is, and Max, Pat, if you find out any Duplass Sundance stuff,
yeah, it's not as easily available. I'm just counting every movie they have, and I'm at 9 already before 2015. So I'm just,
9 and Sundance.
I'm individually counting. And yeah, and the rest are like Toronto Film Festival, South by Southwest.
All right. Well, you can take those 9.
Okay.
And you can take a look at the Rotten Tomatoes score for The People. And I think the number will start with a 5, but it could start with a 6.
All right. Let me.
We'll see. Could be higher, but it ain't going to be 97 and 96 and 91. That would be my prediction. So now you start to get a little clarity there. All right. So this virtual racing.
Yeah.
NTT IndyCar Series. What's NTT?
NTT, I want to say it was a phone company, but.
Like AT&T?
Let's see.
NTT IndyCar Series.
Telegraph and Telephone.
Oh, it is a telephone. All right. So round 3 IndyCar racing. I've been seeing some of this on SportsCenter. It's kind of interesting. I guess everyone has to be sitting in a pretty good simulator, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Some of the rigs these guys have is pretty intense.
Well, I'm guessing from what these guys do for a living and having to go from track to track to track and familiarize themselves with the tracks, I'm guessing that most of these guys have a pretty good rig anyway, right? Like every team has a good rig, right? It doesn't mean it's in the guy's living room, but every team has to have a good simulator, right?
I would think so. I'm curious to know if there's any of them out there where they're like, video games just aren't my thing. I don't even want to do it. Is there anybody who's racing the IndyCar series going, iRacing or whatever, the video game is not, it's not for me. I've never done it before. I'll take the real thing. Or, yeah, it seems like most of the guys, though, are even maybe at the race or in their trailer or some downtime or something. They're all doing.
Yeah. You know,
they're all doing something there.
Well, it's a way to keep your skills sharp, and also they're finding out that the guys who do tons of the simulator stuff are able to transition onto the track as well. Is Simon Pagenaud up there?
Yeah, he's currently connecting right now.
And all right, there he is. Hi, Simon.
Joined by computer audio.
You're clicking the stuff. All right,
there you go. And on Simon's Instagram, by the way, is a photo of him and his rig, his 3 monitors and his chair, and his, looks like a bowl of pasta.
All right. Well, we'll have him. We'll have him up and running in a second. So here's a question for you, Matt.
Yeah. Can hear you now.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Is there an advantage to the equipment? Doesn't the playing field need to be level? Shouldn't we all just be using the exact same mechanical stuff?
Yeah, and that's right. That's a good question. So, Simon, we're talking about welcome. Thank you for coming in, and we're talking a little bit about the iRacing series that you guys are playing in, and we're just starting to question is it a level playing field? Do all of you guys have the same rig and the chair and the monitors, or does everybody set up their own gear? Is somebody at home just like with a Xbox controller or something, and then everybody else has like strapped into a chair? How does it work?
Well, thanks for having me on the show, first of all. And I thought we were talking about equipment to talk together. Like, I thought we'd be on the same equipment.
Yeah. Probably we should all do this from an iRacing chair. That would be easier.
Exactly. But to answer your question, no, I don't think anyone has the same package. I think, you know, I personally wanted to do this 100%. So I went into buying 3 giant screen. So it looks like I'm in a theater room, and I had a previously steering wheel. That's a Fanatec. It's the best you can find on the market. So I went all the way to make sure I would be competitive and just to dive in, you know, and do things like I would do. It go 100%. But I know Connor Daly has an old steering wheel hooked up to a desk. So I don't even think he's got a chair.
Well, his chair probably has wheels on it.
Probably.
So, this is a way to keep people entertained. You know, I was watching some of this stuff on SportsCenter. They're doing it. They're like, who wins, who wipes out, and all that. But it's also a way to keep your skills sharp, right?
Yes, it is. It's actually... it's very interesting. You know, I think I'm going to do more of this in the future because I realized that, you know, it really makes your gears turn and it keeps you sharp. It keeps your reflexes going and your brain's being tricked, right? You can't feel the race car. So you have to find other ways and sharpen other senses to be good at this. So, so I think I might end up being better as a driver out of this.
Right.
And I think it's a great way to entertain the fans.
I was talking to Matt about this new thing of guys that are these virtual stars that win all these races, you know, these computer races, actually transitioning into the race car. And a lot of them have been successful or had some success, more than you would think. But in a way, if you just drove on a simulator, even if you were a pilot, and you drove and you were in a simulator for 10 years, you'd probably be able to fly a plane.
I would agree with you. It's funny. It's a question that keeps coming back right now. I had somebody call me this morning and say, hey, how can I get into racing? And I actually said, you know, why don't you try virtual racing first and see how good you are? So I think it's relevant.
Is my problem, but you tell me, and you guys, I'm guessing your team has really good simulators, not for this purpose, but for learning tracks and such data and stuff like that. The little simulator experience I've had is the wheel, the brake, the way the car feels. Those of us who've driven actual race cars then get into the race car simulator and realize it doesn't really feel anything like the car. How close is your simulator to what your actual IndyCar feels like?
Well, I've managed to take the dimension of where I'm sitting compared to the steering wheel and the pedals, how far they are, and I've adjusted everything to be the same, exactly the same. So I have the same sitting position, but you're right. Like even the steering force feedback is different. You try to replicate it, but it's not fully exactly like it is. So I think if you don't have racing experience, you might learn faster how to drive the simulator.
Right.
I think for us guys like you and I, it's more of an adjustment. But like you said, the simulator we use with Chevy to prepare for each track is a lot more advanced because of the motion of everything and the work that we put into it. So, but this gets pretty close to real life.
You know
how much. I was going to say, how much simulator racing have you done prior to coronavirus, basically?
Well, not as much as I should have, because I'm training on average 5 hours a day right now to reduce the gap with the top guys. But as you can see, I'm running top 5, which is pretty good. I think it's I think, the best I can do at the moment, but I'll get there. Previously, I've had a lot of experience with racing simulator to, like you said, Adam, prepare for the racetrack. But it's different when you're in your living room and nothing moves and it's just you racing against pro races, pro virtual races.
Yeah, the simulator stuff, or half the simulator stuff, is literally just learning the track. It's not really about being fast in the simulator as it is about where the apex, and if it's a road course, especially, it's like really learning the track. So your mind is a little more on trying to find the path than it is, you know, how fast to go. You'll worry about that when you get to the track, but this is different. Now you're racing versus learning. I see. I think this is going to be one of those things where your skill set is improved through this being foisted on you, sort of like when people say, well, I lost my sight, but then my hearing became very keen, or my sense of smell or touch or sense around me was all heightened. I feel like this is going to help your game, even if it feels sort of imposed.
I agree. Like I said earlier, you know, it's tricking your brain, but in other ways, you're developing other senses, like you said, feedback. And I think, you know, as a driver, you always try to improve yourself and make every skills better, right? And there's definitely, I feel, improving some areas of my driving that I didn't even expect before.
Do you have any, you won the last Indy 500, so congratulations. First Frenchman, I'm reading here since, I think it was 1926 or something, insane, or 1920. God, yep. that is a long. I hope he was there to shake your hand when you crossed the finish line. But so what? Any thoughts about the Indy 500? Matt and I were planning on coming out this year. We've been out a few times. We've been there with Willie T. Ribbs. We've had the greatest time ever. It's such an amazing event. But one of the things that makes it amazing is 350,000 people packed into one place. I mean, there's never been more humanity. You know, forget a football game. A football game is 65,000 people. This is five of those. So any thoughts or any discussion or any inside skinny on when that thing could be run?
Well, at the moment, we're scheduled to run August 23rd, I believe. It's going to be a complete different race because of the heat, right? It's going to be in the middle of the summer, really hot. The cars are going to slide around a lot more. It's going to be a different race. Obviously, you know, we're still waiting to see what's going to happen with this virus. We're being positive. I think, you know, IndyCar's done a tremendous job at reorganizing the schedule for the whole season, but most importantly for the fire.
Simon, sorry, you seized up a second there, but I think you're saying most importantly for the fans, and
yes, I did.
Good.
We lost everything after that.
Sorry, I said most importantly is, you know, IndyCar's done a great job at finding a way to run the 500, and the fans are going to be able to go. I think it's going to give us enough time before you know, after the deconfinement to get going. So it's the biggest event in the world. So hopefully we can run it. And I'm very positive.
Well, I'm not worried. I'm going to be there. I won't be wearing gloves or mask because I will have so much vodka in me that no virus could ever find a home. It'll immediately be killed off. Like, you know, my wife's spraying the alcohol all over the counter and wipe it all down. That's what I'll be sweating so much alcohol that no way by halfway into that race, that coronavirus can be running the other direction. I promise you that.
Several people nearby. Simon, the Indy 500 was an exciting race. You did so well, obviously won. And then, but give us a little insight as sort of what happens after that race, aside from huge photo shoots with Norman Pagano and more photos of him on the on the Brickyard over there than it seems like any dog has ever been at a racetrack. But the media tour that encompasses the winner of the Indy 500 is just fantastic.
Yeah, it's incredible. Well, first of all, out of that, Mr. Norman got a sponsorship. So he's being sponsored by Julius K9. They make harnesses for dogs, and they wanted Norman to be an ambassador.
Wow.
So he got more out of it than I did. But
he's making more money than the rest of us.
Well, it's good. He pays for his own food now, so that's great. But no, it's life-changer in many ways. First of all, the recognition of the industry within the industry has changed. You know, I went to the F1 Grand Prix in Budapest, and everybody knew about, you know, the race that we just ran. Everybody knew about the battle I had with Rossi. And it was a very different feeling being recognized by everybody as an Indianapolis 500 winner. So that's the first thing that was most important to me, is being recognized as one of the best in what I do within my industry. And then I think it's not only you're being recognized in racing, but now, you know, you take a different dimension worldwide. The media have had such an impact all around the world with this race that now I'm more known in France, where I'm from, you wouldn't believe. My second best country that's following with Brazil. So it's just incredible to see how much you can grow after winning such a big sport event.
Well, I'm looking at your helmet in the back, and it looks like it has some Brazilian colors on it. So I don't know if that's a coincidence. I can't remember. I'm picturing Senna's helmet a little bit, and it's got a little Senna in it, that helmet behind right. you. And what is the story to that livery? Is that
it is a Senna helmet, actually.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's funny you said that. I actually ran his livery mixed with mine in 2014 at the 500, you know, celebrating his life back then, and being also associated to the Ayrton Senna Foundation, who's helping kids learn how to read and talk. So it's been amazing because he's my hero, and I feel very connected to him in some ways. I'm a spiritual person, so please follow me here. But, you know, I found myself in what he was saying and how he was describing himself while driving. I've been trying to get closer and closer, and now I'm closer to the foundation. And I feel very grateful that I'm in such a position to be closer to your hero. You know, it's quite special. So love Senna, and his driving style, I think, impacted the whole world.
Yeah, well, that documentary was groundbreaking, and obviously the in-car footage of him, like, driving in the rain at Monte Carlo was, to anybody who appreciates driving, it was sort of magical. And yeah, of course, with the F1 sound, and obviously at a time before all the technology was involved with the F1 cars, and, you know, you really had to drive the car, I think to any racing purist, that was some of the most incredible footage ever. And it's smart for you because you wear the Senna colors on the helmet, and then you get to go back to France and be adored, but then you get to go back to, I'm sorry, where do you, Rio, not, where's he from? Sorry, screwed up his home.
Sao Paulo, yeah, Brazil.
Yeah, Brazil. You get to go back to Sao Paulo and then be a hero as well. So you really have two countries now supporting you. Yeah. We're looking at you in the car. Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. That was it. So that was very special for me to wear his colors. And you know what? I mean, when I left pit lane, everybody was looking at the helmet, and everybody had that, that look about it, a respect. It was very special to feel like I was chosen to have such a message. I was very worried not to do well with it because, you know, you've got such pressure now. It's funny because just before the 500 this year, a member of the Ayrton Senna Foundation came and find me and gave me a bracelet, a Ayrton Senna bracelet. And I wore it during the race. You could actually see it on the winning pictures. So it's pretty cool. Very cool.
I saw that dude at the bar. He gave me the same bracelet, and then he handed one to Matt, and then he had one to my kid. He was handing them to everybody. Saying,
It wasn't that special at all.
I keep it special in my head then.
That's what he said. He was laughing about you. He said, I gave one to Passion.
He's like, Passion was really pushing it for me. I want to ask you about Penske. You're driving the 22 Team Penske Chevrolet. But the boss went in and bought the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and then he bought the NTT IndyCar Series as well. That sounds like a big check to write all in one day.
Well, but if you can do it and it's your dream, why not, right? I mean, it's amazing. I think, you know, obviously, if you think about it, like just being super fan here, but imagine this, like you're 16 years old, you go with your dad to that race and you fall in love with it. Then you build your team, you have the most win of anyone in the world. And then after that, you buy the place. I think it's just incredible to see. Yeah, I've got such an admiration for Roger and for what he's capable of doing and the goals that he sets himself and actually doing it is incredible. But yeah, I think, quite frankly, for IndyCar and the IndyCar series, I think we're lucky that we're in this era. I think the George and Herman family did an amazing job to make it the biggest sporting event in the world. But now we are going into the next era of the sport, and we have a lot of momentum. You know, we know how the Penske organization work, and they're going to change a few things and I'm very excited to see how they run it. So, it's going to be an interesting time when we get racing.
Well, we'll be there. We'll be watching. We'll be sweating. And you're right, that heat, it's going to add a dimension that we've never seen before, because track temp is a major deal. It has everything to do with tires and traction, and it's going to make for a different condition, but it'll be the same for every team. But now it'll be something for the team to figure out. It'll be an approach that each team has to consider, and that's going to add another element of strategy to the event. Sure. So it's going to be super exciting. I want to give Simon a plug. It'll be Saturday. It'll be Saturday at 2:30. It'll be on NBC Sports. It's the third round of the IndyCar Racing Challenge taking place in a virtual Michigan International Raceway. I'll be watching, and hopefully we'll come shake your hand at Indy in a few short months when this is all just a bad memory.
Yeah, I can't wait for that. Michigan should be fun this weekend. I've did some practice. Woo! There's going to be some crashes, so stay tuned, and it's fun to watch.
Well, I was also going to say that the only possible downside of all this simulator racing is how easy it is to crash and, you know, just get up and make yourself a sandwich and walk into the kitchen, you know what I mean? I hope that doesn't carry over onto the track.
I hope so, too, because that would be really bad for anybody.
Yeah. You get those big bad budget simulator ideas, like this lap traffic guy is going too slow. I'm going to ram him.
Right.
It's very relieving. Actually, I got to tell you, Adam, when you actually have the opportunity to do that, it's sort of relieving. It's very nice to do when you can.
I think the English word you're looking for is cathartic. It feels nice to ram.
Yes.
Simon Pagino, thank you very much. And hopefully we'll see you at Indy this year.
I can't wait to see you guys there. Thank you.
Thanks, Simon. Indy guys, Matt, always the nicest, right?
Absolutely. I try to swing by and say hi to Simon at the Long Beach Grand Prix every year. And unfortunately, that's completely canceled for a year. So the next time will be Indy 500.
We look forward to it. All right, gang, thanks for tuning in. You can go to amcrolla.com for anything you need. And Uppity and all the other racing docs are over at Chassis, Chassy. You can pre-order my book at amcrolla.com as well. My new book, or Barnes & Noble or Amazon. Click through us. It just helps when you go to Amazon. And until next time, this is Adam Kroll for Simon Pagino. and Matt the moderator, DeAndrea, saying, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
Guys, thanks so much for listening, and I'll tell you a little bit more about our friends at Geico. It doesn't matter if you own your home, you rent your home, either way, I know it can be a lot of work, so bundling your policies, your homeowners and renters insurance with Geico makes it super easy, and it's a good thing because you have so much to do already, especially these days. So just go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com to bundle your home and auto policies.
L. Grimace Box. Hello Kitty keychains. Teeny beanies. For a limited time, your favorite McDonald's collectibles, filled with memories and magic, are now on collectible cups. Get one of six when you order a collector's meal at McDonald's with your choice of 10-piece McNuggets or a Big Mac. Come get your cup while you still can. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
At participating McDonald's for a limited time while supplies last.